This is P.S. You're Wrong, the podcast where we talk trash about the things people love to hate and hate to love, and we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
Yes, and we're straight off of D23 announcements, so we have approximately 900 new, quote-unquote, new things to discuss. Big news week between
so many
that
sequels.
And... Joaquin Phoenix dropping out of a movie because it might have been too gay for him. You know, all kinds of stuff to discuss.
Wow, I missed that one.
Wait,
I must
really?
Have put a block. My block on Joker 2 spread too far and just cut me off from all Joaquin Phoenix news.
Oh my gosh. Okay, well, let's start with that then, because I feel like this is fascinating. So Todd Haynes, who directed May December... was working on a movie maybe it didn't have a title, anyway, some sort of like gay romance, and Joaquin Phoenix was supposed to be starring in it and dropped out 5 days before filming started. So basically, because he quote-unquote got cold feet. So basically the entire production, like after spending millions of dollars or whatever, they couldn't go forward because the main actor decided to drop out. And people were like, oh wow, like this is why you shouldn't castrate people in gay roles. They like get too, you know, upset or whatever. But then it turned out that Joaquin Phoenix was actually the one who found this project and was like shopping it around to other people. Like he was the first person involved. It wasn't like they cast him in this movie. Like he was the impetus for the movie and then dropped out 5 days before. And so then all the producers who obviously put in all this money are like scrambling around trying to figure out like if they can recast him, what's going on. Sort of nobody really knows why he dropped out. One of the producers posted this long tweet thread about how like frustrated she was and how like it's hellish and they're losing all of this money because he just decided to quit. Like, wild stuff.
Interesting. But no news? Nothing? No explanation?
No, I mean, other than he got, like, cold feet, whatever that means.
Yeah.
that he didn't want to be. But it's not like, you know, he's... Well, so the movie was supposed to have some pretty explicit, like, gay sex scenes in it. But it's kind of like... Joaquin Phoenix has been in all kinds of weird movies. That doesn't seem like something that would... trigger him. So I think there must be something else going on as to why he dropped out, but weird.
Well, I have the producer drama too.
Oh, wait, what?
Have you been following this It Ends With Us promo campaign?
I mean, Lively? Really, no, because it's a Colleen Hoover thing, and I was like, I'm not going to watch this movie,
trash,
and
it.
So truly haven't paid any attention.
Well, it's been delightful, because... since the movie came out, there's just been this like sudden hyper fixation on the press tour leading up to it and just the vibes between the two stars slash director, because Justin Baldoni is the director slash lead working against Blake Lively, who is also the producer. And they haven't done any promo together. They haven't been photographed together on the red carpet. There's been no interaction between the two of them. If Blake has been asked about him, she like sort of skirts the answer. All of the cast has like unfollowed him, but follows Blake Lively still. And so now everyone's like sleuthing to figure out what the deal is. But at first everyone was like, oh, like Justin must have done something wrong. Like Justin must be the problem. But then as people have like unpacked what this movie actually is and how it's been promoted through Blake Lively's and Ryan Reynolds' side of things and what she said, they're sort of like, huh, maybe she is sort of the person, the big personality who didn't really take this part seriously because the book is about domestic violence and she gets into this marriage with an abuser. And like, that's the entire storyline, you know, that's like the entire theme. And the director was like, yeah, I took on this movie because it's like really important for me to like highlight this really real and terrifying and, you know, trauma, generational thing. And I've always wanted to put the women at the front of it and like domestic violence. And like every interview he's done has been really serious and really thoughtful and really focused on this content. Whereas Blake Lively is over here being like, bring your girlfriends, wear your florals. Like, yes, like, sure, domestic violence happens to her, but this movie isn't about domestic violence. Like, it's about her. And Lily Bloom is like so much more than just her, you know, being a survivor or whatever. And so there's all of this happening at the same time that Ryan Reynolds and Hugh Jackman are for some reason always showing up to these red carpets because they're promoting their Deadpool movie pretty simultaneously. But at one point on the premiere date, Blake Lively let it slip that, oh, actually Ryan Reynolds, he helped write parts of this movie. Like he wrote one of these major scenes from the book. And it's like so important that everything she's involved in, he's involved in, everything he's involved in, she's involved in, but he's not a credited writer. And this movie was taking place during the writer's strike. So now people are like, oh, was he a scab? Like, did he write? Because the only reason they were able to go into production was because they were like, you cannot write anymore. It is what it is. Like, this is it. And so since the writer of the movie didn't even know that that scene had been rewritten, there's this assumptive timeline that Ryan Reynolds came in during the writer's strike and penciled in a new scene for them, which is shady also because, again, he is not a part of this production team. Like, he has no credit on the movie whatsoever. And so then there's this argument that they had two different ideas for the film and Blake Lively's aligned with the author Colleen Hoover's and Justin Baldoni was like, this is not at all what I wanted or what we set out to do. And so there must have been some tension there in the creative goals of the film. And so everyone's just been, you know, eating this up. It's giving the Don't Worry Darling press tour, but make it Lifetime, you know?
Wait, so has, like, now that everybody's sleuthing online, like, has anybody discussed this with any of the cast involved? Like, has anyone asked Ryan Reynolds if he's
a scab? No. Yeah. Because this all, so the movie premiered literally, you know, Thursday, Friday or whatever. And so they finished their press tours. And that's when people were like, why haven't they ever done a photo together? Like, why haven't they ever been interviewed together? She's done so much promo stuff with the other co-stars. All of it really playful and giddy, like to the point of Ryan Reynolds and Hugh Jackman interviewing her other love interest in this film in sort of a playful, like tongue-in-cheek humor kind of way. And she's also like been, yeah, she's been like doing like these floral bouquet events type things. And so there's been no real acknowledgement of it. And then all the other actors have unfollowed him, but that was only noticed at this like final event. And so there hasn't been any official, you know, engagement from the teams. But I think it just speaks to sort of this, you know, the continued, do we like them, do we not, of the Blake Lively, Ryan Reynolds team. And also her showing up on the Vogue September issue with Hugh Jackman is sort of like, I don't know, I think it's an interesting point in our, you know, culture's need to have people we dislike suddenly, but also maybe actually they are worthy of being disliked. And like everyone's remembering, like, wait, she had this whole like antebellum website and oh, they got married on a plantation. And maybe she is sort of just using this promotion to pretend she's a bigger movie star than she ever has been. And like talking about how like the whole Vogue cover story is that she's a capital M movie star when there's no movie stars left. And like, you know, it's just a fascinating
is she a capital M movie star? I'm like, what's her biggest movie?
No. I mean, she's like, she's gotten attention for her fashion icon status through like the Met Gala and whatever. She's always, you know, now she has her beauty line. She's promoting her hair care line. And like, I've enjoyed her, you know, she's coming out with A Simple Favor too, but even A Simple Favor, there were all those rumors about bad blood between the two stars. And I think it's just, you know, she has that sort of energy of, she even said like, yeah, I could never just be an actor. I have to be involved in everything. You know, like, it's like, it becomes clearer and clearer why her and Taylor Swift get along so much, which is they have the same energy of wanting to be everything, wanting to wear all the hats. Like, she's like, I brought my own clothes into the costume scene. Like, you know, like, it's like, this was her passion project, but it seems like at what cost, you know, like, how far did she go when, what were the expectations originally?
Yeah, it's like, I think that she just kind of seems annoying. And I feel like Ryan Reynolds also sort of seems annoying. And obviously Taylor Swift is annoying. Like, and Hugh Jackman is sort of weird.
Right there, yeah.
So it's kind of like, okay, it's a group of all kind of annoying people hanging out together, and it's like they're kind of working together, but they're also kind of not, in the in a way that, like, I'm sure they all just go back to each other and complain about how these other people in their lives, like, aren't really, like, you know, up to par, like, doing what they want, yeah, or like conflicting with their vision. And it's like, well, no, maybe the costume designer's job is to come up with the costume, so like, we let them do that, you know?
Yeah.
But it is, yeah, sort of weird, so that it's... everybody would be following her still and not following the other guy if she was sort of the nightmare in the process.
Right. So it's almost like more the running TikTok theory, right? Alleged, is that she's not mean, she's not like a monster, and neither is Justin, but it's like she has the stronger personality, and so what she says goes, type of thing. Like, if they're like, oh, I want to hitch my wagon to her cart,
right,
then it becomes easy to be like, oh yeah, well, he wasn't very nice to her, or like, he was, you know, there wasn't so much giving as there should have been, or whatever, you can imagine.
Well, but also, yeah, she's a lot more famous and has a lot more connections than he does, so it's kind of like, oh, if you're Jenny Slate or whoever, it's like, you might like, you're probably better off being friends with her than being friends with Justin Baldoni.
Well, and it's like, he takes it so seriously, obviously, right? Like, he's trying to like make this more than it is, you know. He's focused on the actual essence of the story, which is really tragic at its heart, whereas they seem to be much more happy to linger in the vibes of it all and like gush about the clothes and the romance and the needle drops, you know.
Is the book a sad book, or is it like a horny romance novel?
Colleen Hoover does this thing where she doesn't want to be pigeonholed. So it's like people want to call it like dark romance, right? So there's a lot of, I mean, this book is absolutely bonkers. I only finished one Colleen Hoover book. I hated it. But this book, she like writes letters to Ellen DeGeneres. Like, that's the flashback frame story.
Wait,
is that she's dealing with like the trauma of an abusive father. Like, he's violent towards her mother. And so the way you get that storyline is that she's writing letters to Ellen, hoping that she'll get on the show, or like, she's just, you know, it's sort of like this, are you there, God? It's me, but
right,
it's to Ellen.
Wait, that's ridiculous.
So it's like, that's Colleen Hoover's whole shtick, and it works for some people. And you know what? Whatever. Fine. She's making millions. It doesn't matter what I think. But so there's like humor, but there's also these really traumatic storylines at play that works for some people. It rubs some people the wrong way. It can feel sort of, you know, flippant or shocking, or, you know, kind of trauma porny, but that's her vibe. So it's like, yeah. I think the people watching the movie tend to like it. It's exactly what they expect. So it's not like the movie itself is worse because of this drama, you know? It's not as bad as like Don't Worry, Darling, which was a mess. But it's more that it's just like, yeah, some wire was crossed somewhere. And, you know, when you have the author involved that much, it's never necessarily a good sign.
Yeah, I have no intention of seeing this movie or
reading the book. I was like, no, thank you.
And the Taylor Swift adjacentness is just, you know, an added thing. I guess it discussed Taylor Swift briefly. There was a bomb threat or a terrorist attack or something that was happening at her Vienna show. And so they had to like cancel the show. And then all of these Swifties who had flown to Austria to see the concert were just kind of like stuck there and had their own like giant sing-along thing in the middle of I was like, this is wild. I didn't really pay that much attention to the actual like threat part of it. I was mostly just seeing all of the TikToks and stuff about the crazed fans, like, you know, who had traveled to the city solely to see her and then had the concert.
It seems pretty messed up. Like the U.S., you know, is the one who alerted Vienna to this probable threat. And then it turned out like two of the people involved had been hired as like security and had like, you know, realistic plans for how to carry this out. So it was a real threat, really scary. And I think speaking to the seriousness, like Taylor Swift's team hasn't said anything, which, you know, it's kind of, like, one, surprising that she wouldn't have said, like, oh, sorry, we had to cancel this. Like, the venue is the one who canceled the shows. So people are wondering.
She's released no statement at all.
Yeah, no. So, and I think there's been, like, you know, people have talked to, like, security experts who have said, yeah, that's probably, you know, par for the course. You don't want to draw attention to it, but also you don't want to share how much you know, blah, 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 sort through the next threat. Phases of threat. Supposedly she's hired like a really intense security team for the next round of shows that take place in London. So yeah, it's pretty sad, pretty wild world we live in. But yeah, those Swifties took over Vienna courtyards everywhere, and I don't know how the locals felt about it, but
well, I know people who were going to the concert, and then the concert got canceled. And I feel like this whole summer has just been me, like people that I know, vague acquaintances or whatever, like traveling around Europe and then somehow ending up in like the most bizarre city possible to see a Taylor Swift concert. And yes, so they've been like traveling for a couple weeks around Europe, whatever. Then they end up in Austria, which like I lived in Austria for a summer. So I'm kind of like, oh, like I love Austria, but kind of a random place to go. And then I was like, oh, it was for a Taylor Swift concert. But twist upon twist, they were actually going to propose to each other at the concert. Like the one was going to propose to the other one during the love story.
Oh my gosh. And who then, are these people? How do you know them?
Just like random gays that I met like once.
Okay.
On Fire Island. Like not people I'm close with.
Yeah.
Because truly the most, I mean, hopefully they're not listening, but I was like, when I saw, so obviously, yeah, sorry, I didn't know. Obviously, I did not know that there was a plan to propose at this event. Like, I'm not good enough friends with them to know this. And so the concert got canceled. They were like, oh, like, we can't go, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, like, that sucks that you flew all the way to Vienna and then can't go to this concert. But then, like, a couple days later, they release the, you know, their like engagement video or whatever, which was them getting engaged at one of those like courtyard sing-along party things. Yes. And I was like, I truly cannot think of a more cringy engagement story,
Matthew,
if my life depended on it, than like one, getting engaged at a Taylor Swift concert just in general, but then two, not even being able to get engaged. So you're getting engaged at like a fan sing-along event. I'm like, you're in Austria. There's all kinds of cool places. Like, just get engaged somewhere else, like at a palace,
but
on a mountain, on a whatever.
But
no,
they
and
loved
I do love that for them. And I, you know, want to support all kinds of romances, no matter how cringy they are.
Love is
but
love.
Love is love. But I was like, oof. Oof. So getting engaged, supporting capitalist queen Taylor Swift at her concert. Yikes.
Hey,
you didn't even get proposed to it at Taylor Swift. Well, yes.
Oh, that's amazing. That's you know, what a story, honestly.
I'm really hoping that I don't have to see them for like several months. I mean, which I probably won't, because I haven't seen them in like years, because I don't know if I'd be able to get through a telling of that story without some sort of disdain crossing my face.
Well, I mean, I'll send them the timestamp as a word.
Yeah, perfect. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Listen, all love, but also Matthew did not appreciate this story.
Well, and then of course, obviously, everybody's wearing their like Taylor Swift concert outfits, which we've discussed previously on this podcast, and how I think they're almost hideous. And so it's again like, oh, in all of your engagement photos, you're going to be wearing these like Taylor Swift concert getups. I mean, obviously, the one person didn't know that he was being proposed to, so it's like we really can't fault him. But I'm just like,
oh my gosh, Joan Rivers over here just dragging these poor lovebirds.
What's the worst place that you can think to get proposed to?
I don't know, like a landfill. Like, okay. Realistically, something that someone else might find
a killing
romantic
field.
I would hate. Yes. I guess probably like I would not like to be proposed to in Disneyland. I think that for me is probably too cringe. Yeah. But then I feel bad saying that, because obviously some people do want that, and I just want to support everyone's love.
Look, yes, no, there are lots of things in the world that other people like that you don't, you know? Yeah. It's like everybody has the right to be proposed to in however they want.
I have to tell you off air, like, the worst proposal I've ever heard, but I can't tell you right now. I'll have to tell you. I will. I just remind me.
Wait, why?
No, I can't tell you. I'll never.
Is it a listener?
I don't know. I don't know. I feel like it's just one of those things where it's like too close that it could get back to them, and I just couldn't handle it.
Okay.
But anyways, did you want to tell me about, it sounds like you were into Disney's
new alerts. D23. I mean, I was seeing the tweets or whatever about them and just kept thinking like, wow, because we've talked about this before of how Disney is in a rough streak. It's sequels and reboots, and everybody seems tired of all of that stuff. Marvel isn't doing well. I mean, I guess Deadpool sort of is, but prior to that, it wasn't. And I feel like whatever their next movie is will probably also be bad. Star Wars isn't doing well. We're getting they've scrapped some of these live action remakes that originally they were supposed to do. And so I guess like, I really wasn't paying attention to D23 in the lead up of like, oh, I wonder what they're going to announce. But then as I saw all of the things they announced, I'm like, they really have not learned any lessons, because it's like a bunch more Avengers things, Toy Story 5, Frozen 3, The Incredibles 3, Zootopia 2. Like, it's just so much sequels, reboot. And the only like new thing that they have coming out, there's the new Avatar movie, is the is Elio, which is the Pixar movie that's been bumped like 10 times now. And I feel like that cannot bode well for that movie being good. So I'm just like, oof, the next couple of years for Disney look rough, and I think they're gonna lose even more money than they already have on these projects.
Yeah, losing money for them. What does that mean? It seems it is disappointing, but also like Inside Out 2, you know, broke the $1 billion mark. And like, you know, all these, because we were just talking about this because we rewatched Turning Red with my daughter. And it's like, that's such a charmingly fun, different movie. And however you feel about it, or however you interpret it, I think it's like
the period
there's a lot
movie,
of
yes.
innovation there, and a lot of fun and charm and just originality, and it wasn't ever given a chance, right? Because it was sent straight to streaming, and they just use these numbers to kind of justify the excuses. They're like, oh well, original content isn't working, so we can't do it. And it's just like frustrating, because you just start to feel more and more soulless and empty. And of course, you're going to fill seats with these child-friendly movies, but they're not going to be like, you know, life-defining pieces of work like it was to be like the golden era of Disney Kids, where we got all the original princesses that now define every, you know, everything going forward. And it's just like, it's fascinating to see the Toy Story franchise just get completely, I don't know, destroyed by its own self, where now it's like, oh, they're going to be against the tablets. It's like, what are we doing here? Like, what is this giving us? There's not, you're just missing the mark and just farming out these really simple, really straightforward, really boring redos. And it's frustrating. Like even the live action, like Snow White teaser that came out, it's like, what are we doing? Like, this is animated still, like, you know, cause you're having these animated animals, you're decided to animate the dwarves. And it's like, why? Like, what is this offering? What is this bringing? Like, oh, it's going to be more feminist. It's like, who cares? Like, give me something that's actually interesting. And I don't know how to fix it. Like, I can see why the powers that be feel like the originality isn't working, because you get things like Wish that's just terrible. And you get things like the Jake Gyllenhaal gay son story that they just don't take any care with. And so it's like, okay. But I feel like the answer shouldn't be, well, let's just revert back. Let's just go back. Let's go back to the proven IP, because that too is being exhausted. So it's sort of like, you guys have to just be a little bit braver. You know, you gotta be a little bit brave, a little bit courageous here, and just try to be a little different again, because that's what everyone loved about you.
It is crazy though, because I feel like the last couple big hits they've had were like Frozen and Encanto, which were original properties that then made so much money and launched, you know, these whole new groups of merchandise and all kinds of stuff. You know, you can buy Encanto beach towels or whatever now, and that's based on a new piece of IP, which also then means that all of the stuff is new. You know, it's like, yes, they'll sell things related to Toy Story 5, but it's like lots of people already have Toy Story things.
Yeah.
Where if it's a new movie, you have a whole new, you know, line of merch you can do. Did you follow it all? This is like old news at this point, but the Star Wars hotel at Disney World and that saga?
No.
So they opened this, like, they spent millions of dollars on this, like, massive, crazy Star Wars hotel that was like, oh, you're living in a ship, and it was this special experience. And you know, like, you could, drink Star Wars drinks and whatever, blah, 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 blah. They opened it up. It cost so much money that, like, nobody was signing up for it. And it, like, shut down after a year or so. Like, it was barely open because of how, like, poorly it was doing. And also, I think that was at the same time where Star Wars in general was kind of like crashing and burning for them. And so there just like wasn't quite the fervent interest, I think, as they thought there was going to be. So they had to shut down this hotel, and they lost millions of dollars off of it. And I'm just like, these people are not as smart as they think they are.
Yeah. Well, it's just frustrating because it's like, even the things that didn't do well at first, they just have built themselves a following. Like, even, you know, The Princess and the Frog has like two rides at Disneyland now because people love Tiana. So it's like, yeah, that wasn't the biggest success at first, but when you give something time to breathe, then suddenly everyone loves Turning Red. Everyone's going to the theaters to watch it in its re-release for Turning Red. So it's like, I think they just are so caught up in running these numbers that they don't realize, like, in the long run, you're actually are like losing out, and you're betting on the wrong horse. And then it's like, you get your, you know, constants, you have people filling the seats. And obviously there's a lot of Disney heads there who are going to D23 and excited about like, oh, a new amusement park edition. Like, I get that there's a proven audience and they're just counting on that, but it's just sad to see what it started as and how it became such a huge successful company because of its originality. And now they're just too scared to play with that, even though they're at the top of their game.
Yeah. Somebody really like going after a lot of records, trying to break a lot of records, get a lot of money instead of focusing on art. Sounds familiar to me.
Sounds like every single celebrity and star evers to exist.
Right, but mostly in this Taylor Swift. But mostly Taylor Swift.
existence, but sure, yeah.
Not us. So, we're not capitalists. We're making so no
the
money
Olympics.
Off this
the
podcast.
Olympics are over. Did you catch up on the breakdancing?
I did. I did watch Rae Gunn. The
I love her. I love her so much. She's a hero.
It really is inspiring to watch because it's like, oh, all the times where you think I could go to the Olympics, like I could do this if I wanted to. It's like, oh yeah, and actually you could. Like I am fairly confident that I could do 90% of that routine. Like
it was stunning. I loved it. I honestly, because her name's Rachel, I thought it was a Rachel Bloom skit. Like I thought she just showed up for a bit.
Oh,
like Rachel Bloom does the crazy, the crazy ex-girlfriend.
Yes,
you know, sort of. And that's what I thought it was. I was like, oh, this is funny, like a funny intro. But no, it was a real. And I like don't want to add to the pile on because I really do have nothing but love for her. Like, I'm like, you go, girl. You know, like,
oh,
honestly.
I feel like the internet adores her.
Yeah, there's some mean people out there.
I mean,
but hopefully.
Yes, but the fans were fanning. This was an interesting Olympic cycle for me, I think, because I really wasn't watching the games at all, but I was just getting all of the memes and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting the things that got through to me, like the pole vaulter whose penis was too large and knocked off the pole. Like that was a great sequence of events. The gymnast with the Rubik's Cube and the glasses, loved him.
Yeah.
What's his face running with COVID? Interesting.
Yeah.
Tom Cruise jumping off the top of the stadium.
Well, LA announced that they would not have breakdancing at their Olympics. So
yes, I know. So sad. R.I.P.
Kim once. I mean, that makes it even more iconic. Like if she's the first and the last of the breakdancing Olympic, you know, run, then good for her. I hope she gets on a Wheaties box. Like I love
art. Are you going to go to Olympic stuff when the Olympics are in LA?
I don't have the fire in me to like fight for things. So I don't know how hard it is to get tickets. I also feel like the crowds would be enough to turn me away, which I know sounds like such a like miserly statement, but it's like, if I'm not passionate about like sitting there for 2 hours to watch this sport I know nothing about, then it's sort of like, is it worth me taking that seat, you know?
Right. But I mean, it's like, there's going to be so many events. And also, like, I feel like Penny would be like the perfect age at that point to.
That's true.
Go do stuff.
You
She'll
know,
be like
Penny
10
wants
or whatever.
To.
Yeah.
But it's like, there's a lot of events, but like, do I want to watch like cricket or polo? Not really, you know?
I feel like I could be convinced to watch just about anything for like 2 hours, well, you know? And I think a lot of the events are sort of interesting. Like, do I know anything about equestrian? No. Would I watch equestrian? Like, sure.
Okay,
and like,
plus they
probably have good food, like fencing, taekwondo. I mean, like, again, these aren't necessarily things I want to watch on TV like regularly, but would I watch rowing for 2 hours? Like, sure, that seems interesting
but
enough.
Like,
I've
rowing,
never been to a rowing event.
Where do you even get seats? Like, you, it feels like you'd get bad seats, and then you see 3 seconds of a race that ends.
Okay,
else,
well, maybe
you know
rowing
I mean.
Is a bad example, but I like there's
like, yeah, maybe
speed
like diving,
climbing,
I guess.
Diving.
Yeah.
Honestly, the things I think I'd be least excited about are the sports that are like. Sports. Like, I probably wouldn't want to watch like soccer or basketball or something because it's like, oh my gosh, I've had to sit through so many basketball games in my life. But any of the weird things,
I mean,
like shooting,
with the best players in the world.
Running, whatever. Like,
yeah. We'll look at. I don't even know how you get tickets. When do they go on sale? I don't know. I'll remind me in 4 years and I'll figure it out.
And also it's like the track and field stadiums like have thousands and thousands of seats. You know what I mean? Like,
right. But they also have like dozens of events. So it's like hard to watch because it's not like a concert where you have the mega screens showing the whole action. It's like there's people vaulting while there's people, you know, doing their little, and then there's a trial and everyone's getting their tickets for their families and their celebrities. So it's like, I don't know, Matt, I don't need to unpack this. I have 4 years to plan it, but it just seems like a hassle is what I'm saying. It's like getting F1 tickets, right? Like, it's like everyone's going, but the tickets that the normies can actually buy are actually not that fun to go to, you know?
I mean, I have no idea what F1 even is, let alone how to get tickets for it. But this feels like a Debbie Downer mentality to be having when you could go to the Olympics for once in your life, you know?
Well, I've already been to the Olympics. I was at the Salt Lake City Winter Olympics, and they're going back to Salt Lake City in 8 years or whatever.
Okay, so the Olympics are just obsessed with you, is apparently. Yeah.
And actually, I went to London. I went to London during their Summer Olympics, and I saw a cricket match there, actually. So, you know what? Yeah, I guess they just love me.
Okay, well then never mind. You don't have to go to the Olympics. I'll fly out and I'll go to the Olympics with Rob.
Yeah. Well, Rob doesn't want to go. Rob's like, if I'm not front and center, I'm not interested. So, but you know what, Matt? We'll house you, and we'll get you to the games, and you'll have a great time.
Okay, Penny, you know, and I, we're going to see Judo 2008. Here we come, baby.
Yeah. But is that your love? It is the Olympics.
No, my love it is the movie Cuckoo, which came out this weekend, the horror movie starring Hunter Schafer, which I was trying to pitch this to my brother earlier on the phone, and I was like, it's really good, but also I sort of can't tell you anything that it's about because it's a really weird movie and it's hard to tell you what it's about without giving away the plot. But basically, Hunter Schafer moves with her dad and stepmom and they're like kids, so I guess her like half sister, to sort of this new house kind of like in the middle of the like Alps sort of, and it's sort of I don't know, like in the woods kind of, and weird things start happening, and Dan Stevens is in it, and yeah, it's just kind of a wild horror movie. It's definitely more on the like A24 side of horror things where it's like there's kind of weird going on, but I really loved it, and I think Hunter Schafer is great and gave a great performance, so I would recommend if you're a horror person.
Yeah, I saw some people choose Trap over this, so.
Oh, yeah, no, Trap was heinous, and Cuckoo was way better, but honestly, like, Trap is so easy to understand, and I think stupid people sometimes just like things that are easier, and so that's why they went with Trap.
Right, yeah, no, that makes sense, that checks out. Yeah. Thank you for sharing. Speaking of complications, Rob and I have been rewatching Lost. But,
you're always rewatching Lost.
But we're rewatching it chronologically.
What is that?
So someone like went through and time stamped all the like actual like chronological order of the flash forwards, flashbacks, like you know, the origin stories and whatnot. And so we're watching it in order. And honestly, it's been really good. It's been fascinating.
Wait,
it's been fun.
So it's like, oh, you have to go to episode 3:15 minute mark and watch that scene, and then okay, now we have to cut to episode 10. So you're just watching like 5
minutes. To be fair, like most episodes are like 30 minute chunks of the story, so it's not like that much back and forth. At the beginning there was, because you get like the Jacob story, and then you get right now we're at the very end of the era where they're stuck in the 70s. And so that has like a little bit of back and forth between episodes, but really you get into a swing of it.
But there's all the flashbacks in the first bunch of seasons, and you'd have to watch all of those before they get on the plane or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah, so we've seen like all of them be born or whatever, like their first run-ins. I don't know. I just think it's interesting. It's fun. It's different. And it's like, I'm excited to get to the island, because that's not going to come for like, you know, 2 seasons worth of content. And yeah, I just like really thriving right now. So.
I love that this, the most convoluted, complicated watching process that I have ever heard of in my life, is you're like, oh yeah, great, down for this 100%. I have time on my hands to do this. But trying to maybe go to the Olympics in 4 years, no, we could, too exhausting.
If someone wrote up a guide and was like, here's tickets for this, here's tickets for that, then of course I'd go.
This has been done for me.
I just have to click buttons. You know,
yeah,
I'm not doing the strategizing. I'm not going through and saying like, oh, this is in 1981, so we have to watch it before this scene that was in 1982. You know,
heinous.
It's all been packaged for me.
This is absolutely ridiculous. I have never heard something more absurd. Oh my gosh.
I love it. Well, actually, Matt, there is like someone who's like actually downloaded the HD versions of Chronological Loss, but you have to like download the torrent, and Rob and I are too scared. Like, we don't know.
That makes more sense. This is sort of like people who would read the Bible through in chronological order. I don't know if this is a phenomenon in your upbringing, but sort of like once you'd read through the Bible like 30 times, people were getting kind of bored. So you read the books of the Bible like, in chronological order, which is not how they're
chronological.
No, it is not even close to chronological. I mean, like, I guess sort of vaguely in a very general sense, but...
It seems pretty...
It's not. And there's lots of things that...
the dead Jesus, you know, it's like...
Right, but there's stuff that happens in... Like, lots of the books take place at the same time. They're sort of just focused on different people. You know, like, David is in, like, a bunch of different books of the Bible, doing different things, and there's, like, poetry. I don't know. There's all kinds of different stuff. So, anyways, you can read it in chronological order.
Cute. Well, this is my Bible. Like, this is as important to me.
Okay. Wild. In a sort of weird twist, we decided not to watch the Blake Lively movie this week. And so we're like, what is available? And we picked The Bike Riders, which came out a while ago, but is now newly streaming on Peacock.
So you have homework.
Right. So that's the in. So in the next 2 days, go watch Bike Riders. It's streaming on Peacock. We will be doing an episode about this. It has Tom Hardy and Austin Butler and Jodie Comer, and it's about a biker gang. Some interesting things going on to discuss, I think. And it'll be more fun if you, the listener, have watched it. So scurry on over and get that done.
Perfect.
Okay, well, thank you, everybody, for listening, and we'll be back on Thursday. Bye.